What do you think it means to be a person?
I don't know.
Me either.
Really.
Say scratch that again.
Scratch that again.
I'm Caitlin Metz, a non-binary illustrator and designer.
I'm Rebecca Tossig, a disabled storyteller and writer.
And this is Scratch That, Parenting and Reparenting Off Script.
A podcast for people trying to parent and person at the same time.
Head over to our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast, for show notes and a transcript of today's episode, and also to join the conversation.
Thank you for being here. Hi, friends.
Hey.
Happy Monday.
Here we are, our guest today. Caitlin and I are so excited to talk to Kate Wieners. Kate is living her life off script in such a tangible way. I feel like if we were watching like the movie trailer for Your Life, Kate, the narrator would come on and say, Kate quit her corporate job to open a local bookstore, right? Like it's such a great tagline, but that's your life. You quit this corporate job in order to open this dreamy little bookstore called Monstrous Books. If you live anywhere in the Kansas City vicinity or surrounding area, like you, and you haven't been to this shop yet, you have to come visit. It's one of the most charming, coziest little spot. It's full of plants. They sell books and plants and like staff who love books, and you can ask them for any kind of recommendation and they will like figure out exactly what book you should read next. I've read many books based on recommendations that have become my favorites. I started to work with Kate a little bit more with the launch of Scrappy Ones, my picture book, and started to hear little tiny bits of your story of opening this bookshop. And it just made me want to talk to you so much more. And so that's one of the reasons we have this podcast, is the great excuse to talk to people that we want to just like grab for an hour. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us about your journey and your off script life and how you've kind of navigated this world. We're so excited and honored to have you with us.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. It's so funny to hear you say it or describe it like that, because you guys feel this too. Like when you're living your life, it's just your normal. So hearing it from someone else's perspective is fun.
Oh gosh. Okay. We love to start our interviews asking about your little self. So we would love to hear about little Kate, what you were learning or thinking about yourself, the world, your place in it, how you felt about books or plants.
Yeah. Yeah. So little Kate, we moved around a lot when I was growing up. And so we never lived anywhere for longer than a couple of years, which is, it's interesting for most people because I had a new friend group, like an entirely new friend group every couple years. And I had to learn how to make new friends a lot. And so I think that does help me a lot now, because no one's really a stranger. You can talk to anybody, make friends with anybody. But it was always really small towns. So I grew up in small towns in the Midwest, Iowa primarily. And so that is like what I am used to. Everybody knows everybody. And so I feel like that has always been kind of my world. And moving to Kansas City was such a big adventure. And we were fortunate to have a lot of college friends that moved here with us. And so it's always felt like we have this small community. We've learned and met so many people in our community through the bookstore, which has been really great. And it's like, I didn't realize how much small town was important to me until I didn't live in a small town anymore, and having that for my family also. So like definitely little Kate is used to small town. Everybody knows everybody. But I feel like that comes with a lot of standard character too for most people. Like I got my first job when I was 14, so little Kate was always working. And like before that, it's like I was a babysitter. And so I transitioning into adult, I feel like that is carries over too. Like I'm used to like working in small town, working in small town like work ethic, because it's all I ever knew.
Oh, I totally see that in like the vibe of the bookshop. I mean, like It felt a little bit to me the first time we like walked in the doors of Monstros. It felt a little bit like time travel, but as you're describing it, it also feels a little bit like geographic travel. Like you are transported to like that small town, small community vibe. You've done that really successfully.
Thank you.
Just like the energy that emanates from the space.
It was very important to us when we were opening the store that we wanted it to feel like it had been a bookstore that was there for a long time and like had history. And we didn't have that, obviously. Like, we're brand new. We've never done anything like this before. And so there are subtle ways that you can create that in a space. And it's definitely part of the vibe of the store. But that was also very intentional because we wanted it to feel like old and been around there for a long time. And we wanted it to feel like very community-based and community-driven.
I was telling Caitlin before you popped on the call, Kate, about the like even just the phones that you have. Is it like literally? It's not literally a rotary phone.
It's not a rotary phone. But it is. It's like got to be from 70s or 80s. I don't know. But we found it at an estate sale, and Justin, my husband, was like, "We can just put it on a top shelf. It'll look really cool." And then as we were starting to pack stuff up to take it from our house to the store, I was like, "Where's that phone? I think I want to use it as an actual phone." And he was like, "I knew you were going to say that." "I cut the cable out of it because I didn't want it hanging off the bookshelf." And so he had to rewire that telephone that I could use it as the actual telephone in the store.
Oh my gosh. I love that. I love that, knowing that origin story now. But it's so worth it because it's so worth it. One of the first things I noticed was like, oh.
Yeah. It's also because it is very analog. We don't have an answering machine at the store. So people will like email me sometime and they'll be like, "I was going to leave a message, but there was no machine." And it's like, it is almost a relief because it's one less thing that I have to keep up with or stay on top of. Like, people aren't just like leaving messages on our machine all the time or leaving voicemails. It is helpful for my brain, like one less thing I have to track, but it's also like forces people to contact us in a different way too if they can't get through like during business hours,
which they totally can. I mean,
yeah.
Okay, so I just did a deep dive like on your website, and I like your video on the about page, and I read your blog post about quitting your job and opening it. And I was so struck by how you answered this question at the party about like, if you could be doing anything, what would it be? And you answered it. And I feel like this moment happens so often where, and it's just like, conversational. It's like, oh, what would you be doing? It's like, oh, this dreamy thing.
Yeah.
And it just like passes right by you because we're so locked into like the like regular order of things, or you already have a job that like doesn't totally suck. And so you're like, it's fine, we'll just do this. But then your partner was like, "Hey, were you serious?" And there's something about that pause there that just like, if as I was reading it, I was like, oh, that had to be so validating. You had to feel really seen. And it was just like a moment where you could evaluate this, like, is this thing real? And so I don't have like a specific question, but I want to talk about what that moment felt like. And then I would love to dive into what is it like working with your partner so closely on something like this?
Yeah. I'll just tell a little bit of like context in my backstory. So I, for maybe 15 years, worked in corporate sales. I sold software. I was a sales engineer. And so the last company I worked for got acquired by Cisco, and Cisco has like 80,000 employees. And so like, you are literally a number on a page. Like, my direct team knows me, but outside of that, like, how known am I? And so I went on maternity leave shortly after the acquisition. And I came back from maternity leave, and it's just one of those things. maternity leave is really great in the sense that you can take a break from your day to day, and it almost like plucks you out of what you're doing every day, and you have time to think about, like, do I like this? And so I went back from maternity leave and I was like, I don't really think that I like this. And it's so easy to just keep doing whatever it is that you're doing, because it's safety net. Like, it was a good job. I made good money. I had good insurance. Like, it was stable for my family. And I did really enjoy my immediate team and the people that I worked with. I love them so much. But the work itself was like, I happened upon this career. I don't really know how. I am really fortunate, but I don't know if this is what I want to do forever. I had a coworker once say, you just have to put your head down and work for 40 years. And when you put it that way, it's like, I can't do this for 40 years. Like,
you had a picture.
I know, right? Like, it's the most painful thing to hear. But it does put it into perspective for you. Like, I don't know if I can do this for one more year, let alone 20 more years at this point. And so at that point, I started looking for other opportunities. But when you've been doing something for that period of time, the opportunities that come to you are the same thing that you've been doing, just at a different place. And it's like, I don't want to just move to another company where I'm going to be doing the same thing and end up in the same spot in 2 to 5 years where I'm like, oh, I'm not happy what I'm doing. And so I really started to evaluate, like, what is it? Is it like a different role, like a different sales engineer role? Is it like the product that I'm selling that I don't like? And I went through, at that time I was transitioning into more of a management role. So I was doing some management trainings. And Rebecca, I've talked to you about a couple of them before, but one of them was just like Zoom call management meeting. And they were talking about how your career is kind of like a mountain peak. And sometimes you have lows where you're not really happy. And sometimes you have like highs where you're really loving what you're doing. And to keep people at that peak, you have to find like where their interests and their hobbies align with their skills. And I was like, oh, that's really good feedback. And I'm like, I know that I'm good at this people listening and talking to in the sales aspect. Like, what is my passion? Like, what is the product that I should be selling? And I love reading. And so I was like, oh, maybe I could be a librarian. Like, that's like the first thing you think about with books. And then it's like, no, that's an entire career. And I am like in my mid-30s at this point. Like, I don't want to go back to school. I don't want to start over in that capacity. And so then I like was sitting here on a weekend one day and I looked up, like, how much money do you have to open a bookstore? Because it's like, how, like, could I ever do that? Like, how, like, I don't know. And so it's just one of those things where you're like kind of toying with these ideas in your mind of, I don't want to vocalize this yet and sound like a crazy person, but I'll like do my secret Google searches over here. And then we went to this party with a bunch of our closest friends. And it's like, maybe it is serendipitous. It's also probably where a lot of people our age end up. Like, am I happy doing what I'm doing? Because you just do the mundane for so long. And so someone said, if you could do anything, what would you want to do? And I said, I think I'd want to open a book and plant store, because that was so at the forefront of my brain at that point. And when we were on the way home, Justin, who obviously knew at this point I was looking, like, I'd done interviews at that point with other companies. I was pretty far in the process. And he was like, is that something that you would really want to do? And I said, yeah, I do think it is something that I would want to do. And he said, let's do it. And I think
these are my goosebumps.
we if you ask Justin today, like, what his goal for the store is, like, we were talking about this the other day, and his was just to create something tangible and real, because he is a graphic designer. And so he does a lot of website build for people. He does a lot of like logos, designs, branding. And at the time, he was also working in a corporate space. And as a creative person in a corporate space, you don't get a lot of freedom. And so we just got to this place where it was the perfect timing for both of us to do something really cool, because he wanted to be able to create something physical and real and his own. And I just wanted to do something that I really loved. And so I think that maybe for everybody, you're not going to hit that exact moment at the exact same time, but it, like, the stars kind of aligned for us in that capacity. And so that was the point where I started like doing the like business plan and figuring out, is this even a viable option? Like, is it something that we can get off the ground? And also, if we do get it off the ground, could it sustain us? And so, like, fast forward to what is it like to work with your spouse? It's really interesting. And Justin will say this too. When you have somebody that you have been with and for such a long period of time, like, we started dating when we were 18. So we've been together for almost 20 years at this point, which is crazy to think about. But when you spend so much time with someone, you're like, we don't really have a lot of filters anymore, because it's just like, you're with me every day. And so it, like, with your coworkers, you do have boundaries and you have a lot of lines, and you can kind of like be this person in your job. And then, like, nobody's really crowding your style. but when you're doing it with somebody who, like, you don't have filters or you don't have boundaries with, it's a lot harder. It's a lot more challenging, because you both have very strong opinions about the way something should be done, or the way that you would normally manage your own business or your own work day to day. And now you're kind of sharing that with someone who has like that equal personality. So you almost have to like create these new, like, not necessarily filters, but we had to start setting boundaries. Like, we can't talk about work before we drop the kids off, or we shut it off at dinner time. Like, we don't talk about the store after dinner. And like, you not necessarily filter things, but you do have to retrain your brain a little bit to be like, is how passionate am I about this specific idea or this specific topic? And so when we are debating something now, we have like, it's almost like a new language. It's like, he will say, I am like 10% serious about this, or I'm a 70% serious about this, based on like how important it is to you. Because like, you may have a really loud voice about something, but it's not like you have as much stake in that specific item. And so like, we've had to figure out new balances, definitely working together versus just being partners.
I love that, just as a practice of, because like, we have opinions about all kinds of things all the time, but to identify it, especially with your partner, and being like, I have this big feeling about this thing, but it's actually like, it matters like maybe 10%.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's a made up percentage. There's no real percentage system, but it's like, it does help you articulate to the other person, like, I may have like stronger opinions about this, or I may be trying to tell you why I think this way to help make sure that you really do feel confident in what decision you're making. But I don't really care either way what decision is made. And so it is interesting.
So did he quit his job too, or did he keep his job?
Oh, that is such a crazy question. He got laid off, which was not part of the plan. we had a plan and that was not part of it.
Plan was, yeah, to keep one steady.
Yes. Yeah. So we decided in June. June was when we had the conversation of should we do this? And we decided yes. And so I started the planning, and in July it was like, okay, we're 100% going to do this. In early August, we started looking at locations, I think it was. And in like mid-August, he got laid off. And the plan was always he would keep his corporate job and insurance and like the stability. And then I would do this wild hair of an idea. And when he got laid off, he made this list of things like, here are potential things I might do now. And he had always wanted to start his own design studio. And so like he made this list and he was like, I think I want to just take this opportunity to do my own design studio. Like, I don't want to go back to working for someone else. Because again, when you're a creative person, like you don't get to do all of the creative things that you would want to do. And so he said to me at that time, it doesn't change what we want to do. It just changes the risk level. And that was really hard for me because I am a very risk averse person. And so my brain was like, okay, we're going to do this. And it was a little bit terrifying, but we are fortunate it has worked out for us. So he started his own design studio around the same time that we started the bookstore. And so the bookstore was actually his first project for the design studio. So when he got laid off, he just focused on the website and the brand and the logo and everything like that for the bookstore. And then that's kind of like what propelled us. But he got to this point with the design where he was like, okay, you have to find a space. You have until November 1st. And I was like, okay. So I will pick a space. And so like it really was, when we talk about the timeline of the store and doing it with a spouse, it really was like all of these stars aligned things for us. And most people, like the laid off thing is not the most ideal scenario, but it kind of was for us because he was able to spend so much time that he wouldn't otherwise have been able to spend on just the bookstore. And that is what propelled me too, because then I had a timeline of, I knew I need to have a space by this point. And so it's kind of these crazy things where you're like, this is not the plan and it's not how it should be working out, but it worked. So
as you are describing that whole arc and the stars aligning, I would love to dig in a little bit more into like what those specific stars were. I think if I'm thinking about your life as a movie, which is turning into the theme of this hour, is just like Kate's life as a movie and how we frame the movie trailer. But I'm thinking about like what makes that such a compelling story? Like, what is that universal pull that we all feel towards that tagline of like leaving the corporate world for this dream? And I think part of what feels really relatable about it is that feeling that I think that a lot of us maybe resonate with that description that you have of like, everything was kind of good enough. You know, I liked my coworkers. I didn't really love what I was doing, but grind it out for 40 years and then you got your, you know, like that.
It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Like there's something about that that is so status quo and so familiar that I think a lot of us would resonate with to some degree. And so I've heard you sort of name some of what those stars were. And I'm just kind of wondering how you think about how it was that you individually, and I guess as a partnership, actually like made that risky leap. I mean, like the image of the 40-year grind seems important. I wonder how much of it is like having a partner that says, are you serious? Let's do this. I wonder about the experience you had with the horses, which is something that you shared with me the other day. How do we think about what do you point to as the thing or the cluster of things that actually propelled you out of that status quo storyline that so many of us know into like taking that scary risk.
Yeah. I think that there were a few turning points for me that like I could like point out and be like, oh yes, that was a pivotal moment in this. The first two I already mentioned, like just thinking about like, oh, I could, like, my passion is books and I am good at this thing. How do I align those? And then Justin saying, yes, let's do it. And then it is so scary. And so even after I started the business plan, I kept waiting for someone to be like, yes, this is a brilliant idea. It's going to be successful. You should do this. And so I did the horse training that I've told Rebecca about, and it was the most incredible training I ever experienced in my time in the corporate world. It was equine training. And so they flew us to North Carolina, and it was like 3 days of, there was like two in-class days that we did, one on either end of the like meeting with the actual horses. But horses don't have an ability to lie to humans because it's like a survival tactic for them. Like they read energy so well. And so that is why it's so good to do management training with them, because it's like, if you aren't leading the horse, then the horse will try to lead you because that's how it sees its role. And so it was very telling. There were like so many things that were telling about my personality, just like that came through with the horse training. That was very interesting. But Rebecca, after we talked about it, I was like on this tangent when we were in the store talking about the horses. And I was like, what really was it about the training that was so pivotal for me to keep moving forward in this path? And I remembered it after we talked. Whenever we sat down before we went to go to the horses, the guy who owns like the company and all the horses and everything, he told us his story. And he also was like an exec in the corporate world. And he said, I would just get to the next position. And as soon as I would get that position, I would think, okay, what is the next one? And it was like, he was never satisfied with what he was doing. And he finally got to like the last rung, and he was like, well, what now? And then he went home one day and he said to his wife, I think I want to quit my job and start this horse training business. And she said to him, look at how successful you have been doing something you hate. Think about how successful you will be doing something you love. And I just started sobbing in this training because like I told Justin that the other day, and I started crying again because it was just like she had zero hesitation of like, of course, like you will be successful doing this thing you love, because if you can make a life out of doing something you hate, then like think about it with passion behind it, you know? And so that was like the, okay, this is my next pivotal moment of we're going to keep doing this. And so then I started meeting with like business coaches, and everybody I met with was like, this isn't going to work, or like,
really,
how will you ever compete with Amazon? And I kept telling Justin, like, I just don't think that like people don't have the option to do something other than Amazon. Like there's very few bookstores in our city, and like luckily more and more starting to pop up. Like a lot of people are swinging away from Amazon or like searching more face-to-face interactions with their shopping experiences. But I kept searching for somebody to be like, yes, this is a great idea, you're going to make it. And finally Justin was like, you just have to do it. And it was almost like a now or never point. He said to me one day, he was like, if you're not going to do it, somebody else will. And that was a point where it was like, I don't know if someone's going to make a bookstore, but it is true. And there's like, this is not an original saying I don't know who said it first, but we say it in our house sometimes of like the work will get into the world however it needs to. And so if it's not me, it will be somebody else. And so like, why not me? And so there were just like, it was a lot of like really small things that were like, I just felt like signs that, yes, this is the right path. I need to keep doing it. And we, like, at some point you have to take the risk. And it is always going to be a risk. And that is one thing that I wish, like, looking back now, that I could tell myself a year and a half ago, of like, it is like coaches' jobs to tell you areas you might fail, right? So that you can be prepared for them. And it's like, no one's going to, like, there's probably not any single person that's gonna be like, yeah, there's zero flaws in this idea. But you just kind of have to trust your gut and try it.
And all that language of like, take the risk and trust your gut. And I'm thinking of like the other cliche, take the reins. I mean, it does kind of bring me back to that horse feeling of like, you know, I've been looking for someone else to tell me what to do or to give me the thumbs up, but having to like somehow be the one to grab the reins and trust that gut feeling, it is like a leader.
Yeah. Justin got me this shirt last year for my birthday, and he was like, I saw it in an Instagram ad and it got me, because it's just like this cowgirl, and the shirt says "the hell I won't," and is like, sometimes that is my personality, because it's a bunch of people being like, I don't think this will work, and I'm like, watch me. Which is it's only half true. Like I internalize a lot of things, and I will like be nervous about every decision that I make, but at the end of the day, you do just have to make the decision and move on, and just it's not always going to be the right decision, and you just have to understand that's okay, and you will figure it out from there. But you also have to remember that you're not making all of the decisions at one point in time. You're doing a little bit at a time. And so like, it took me 3 months to get to, which in the grand scheme is not that much time at all, but it took me 3 months just to be like, okay, yes, I am going to do this thing. And then it took me another month to find a space. And then, so it's like, you're not making every big decision. You just have to make the next decision.
Mm-hmm. I think this is part of what makes you my favorite protagonist for this story that I'm watching in my head. because that bravery, I don't know, it reminds me of what I say to Otto a lot, which is like, being brave doesn't mean that you're not scared. Like, being brave means doing the thing even when you're scared. And I think that is what makes it that much more exciting to watch you do this, to be someone who does have that part of you that kicks up with risk and is risk averse and scared. And this isn't just easy, but we're doing it anyways.
Yeah.
Is part of what makes that, makes it fun to cheer for what you're doing.
Yeah.
And really, I don't know, feel possible.
I think it's interesting too, because like with every day that passes, it's like the snowball gets a little bit bigger. And so like, it feels like a bigger risk every day. Like it's not that I don't feel nervous anymore. I feel like more nervous now than what I did before, because now this thing is out in the world and I am keeping it afloat, versus before when it was just me taking the risk. It's like, okay, like worst case scenario here, it's just us and our little savings, and like we can bounce back. But now it's like we have employees, and so it's not like that risk ever goes away once you make the decision to do something. It just morphs into something else, and you're taking a different risk like every day. And so someone told me early on, it was like, yeah, I was like, as soon as I figure out this chaos, then I will blah. And she was like, you kind of just got to get comfortable in the chaos. And that is so, it's so true. Like, because I feel like I'm flying by the seat of my pants most days, but you kind of, you take every day. You get what done you can, and then make what decisions you have to and move to the next one. But
interrupting this episode to say thank you to everyone supporting the podcast on Patreon.
We love seeing your comments come through. We love getting to know each of you better. Like, you being there really means the world to us.
If you want to support the project financially, you can become a paying patron for as low as $5 a month. That's less than a latte.
But there's lots of free ways to support the podcast too. Sharing episodes, giving us one of those very pretty 5-star reviews, all of that makes a huge difference too.
And you can also join Patreon without paying. So the show notes will always be there for you. Okay, back to the show. As I was looking at the website, I was like, oh my God, Rebecca, they have so many employees. Like, this is so legit. But it makes me think about, like, you talked about the community that you're wanting to build with this space. And that feels like outward facing to the like collective community, but you're also building that in the space with your team. Like, yeah. That feels, I don't think we didn't have a question about this, but like, it feels like there's something there about like, you have added more risk, but you've added more people to the team and you're creating this like culture and space. And I wonder how that, like, how does that balance out with the fear and knowing like, oh, the stakes are high. It's not just me and my family, but it's also all these other people. But like, what's the like shiny part of that?
That is the most stressful thing to me, to be honest, because it's like, okay, I can deal with my own family and like figure that out. Like, we will figure it out. We have fallback options. But now we have this team of 6 other people and that we employ, and they rely on this income. And I think that that is the heaviest thing for me always. Like, if we're being honest, like, there are nights where I lose sleep about that, because I'm like, what if this doesn't work? Like, what if my risk was wrong and now I'm taking down these people with me? But I have to remind myself that everybody came on knowing the risk. Like, everybody joined the team because they believe in what it is that we are building in the community, and they are choosing to be a part of that. And then I also just have to like trust that we are building something and it will take time, and like it's going to be okay. I tell people, like, we will always figure it out. It's so funny, Rebecca. I always tell Laramie, I'm like, we're not perfect, but we're scrappy. Like, we will figure this out. And so, like, at the store, we'll be like, we're the scrappy ones. Oh, so, like, we use it all the time around this store. Holy because it's, God. Like, you just, like, we just have to figure it out as we go a little bit. And we are so fortunate for the staff that we have that have been able to help us do that. And it has grown very kind of organically. I don't know if I could have done interviews and selected a better team than what, like, kind of stumbled into the store and we magically collected. The thing that I think I'm most proud of about the store is our staff. Like, the way people treat each other and our customers is, it like makes me really happy. And it feels like it is an extension of Justin and myself and what we want in the community. And like, when the team leaves, like, whoever's working, they'll be like, bye, I love you guys. And it is like, that is the most heartwarming thing to me, that these people did not know each other a year ago. And now they care about each other enough to say, I love you, when they leave. And it's like, that is probably the most, that is the thing I'm most proud of. And then after that, it's like the thing that is in the community now, like, that I'm so proud of that. But
I love that. Bye, I love you. They're getting to be a part of this special thing that you're making.
Yeah.
And I feel that from them every time I'm in the shop. It's just like you feel cared for, not in like a pushy way, but like in a gentle sort of like here for you way. Even when we bring our son in or when it's just us, like it feels that way. And I would love to talk a little bit more about this community piece, because it seems like even before recording this conversation, I have felt that value from both you and Justin quite a bit of like what it is, that sense of wanting to build community. And I think you mentioned Justin wanting to make something tangible. It feels like you are filling a larger need, like that maybe you felt in yourselves first, but it's not just unique to you, like that feeling of needing community, that feeling of wanting something tangible, to be face to face with people. And I guess I would just love to hear you talk a little bit about what it is that you see as like what you want to offer the community. Like, what are those things that you're offering? And as you've actually gotten into building this and making it and doing it in the community, if it has manifested the way you expected it to, if it's been what you've expected or if it's been different than you expected.
Justin has always had this idea of like he wants really deep roots in the community. And so I don't know if we necessarily set out to create that with the store. It has just almost been like a byproduct of it, and it is like the best byproduct of creating the store, I think. But we also felt coming out of COVID and just like where we were with the girls, like Monroe is starting first grade, and it's like we don't know any of these parents. Like, we know our neighbors, like the four houses around us, but beyond that, like, we don't know our neighbors. And I mentioned this before, but we both grew up in really small towns where everybody knows everybody. And so it just is, it's a different environment. And we wanted to create more of that small town, or have more of that small town feel for our girls. And so with the store, one of the very first days we were open, there's a woman that comes in, like a pretty regular customer. Her name's Danny. I love her. She was in, and an older woman came in, and they were just talking about what books they were reading. And the older woman said that she had just finished The Covenant of Water, which is like a brick. And she was like, I read it in one sitting. And Danny reads a lot of fantasy. And she was like, well, if it's that good, maybe I should try it. And then the older woman was like, well, will you make a recommendation for me then? And Danny gave her ACOTAR. And the woman came in, A Court of Thorns and Roses, for everybody who's not familiar, but it's like a romantic, steamy romantic fantasy. And the older woman came in like a couple weeks later, and she's like, I finished the book your friend recommended to me and I loved it. It's like, it was like one of the first experiences that I had where it was like, we don't have these conversations with our neighbors, and we would never have this space or experience to share these things with each other. And a bookstore allows for that, like the amount of conversations that happen about books that you enjoyed is so interesting. And I don't think until you are in it and you see it that you understand how quickly that community forms and is built around these stories, because it's just like, every story is so unique and it means something different to everybody. And so being able to share those is like being able to communicate or say things that you might not have otherwise, or you might not feel brave enough to say or bold enough to say. And so it's just like, that is like just an aspect that I don't think people think about enough. Because you think about community and you're like, this is just a fun vibe and space for people to come to. But and like that is what the goal was. Like, we wanted to make something really cool in the community that would be something that the community would be proud of. Like, you want to take your family there when they're in town type of situation. But you don't really, like, maybe Justin did and I didn't. Like, I didn't really think of how deep that actually was or what that actually meant until I saw it. And then it is like, oh, this is so important. And like, we have so many teens that will come in and just like walk around the store. And that also feels important and on a different level, because it's like they have a space that they feel safe to just hang out and walk around that they feel like is cool. Or we do book clubs now in there. Like, a lot of people work from home, and so they don't have a way to meet friends or do things like they did before when you were in an office or you had work events. And so we've had, like, there's a woman in my book club who early on, she was like, I joined these and I don't, like, I lead the romance book club. And she was like, I don't ever read romance, but I just need community. And she was like, I just need friends. And after a couple book clubs, she was like, this really saved my life. And it is like, you don't think of how important these small things are for people until you experience it.
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh.
It always feels like you have to do something so grand. And it's like, actually, no.
Like, you just got to show up.
Show up, like, open your doors, make a cozy spot.
And it's like, you don't even have to be reading the most profound thing. Like, mm-hmm. we're, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a romance book club. Like, it's just for fun. And it's like, you just, again, it, like, when you talk about taking risks, it's like, you don't even like, maybe it's not taking this grand risk. Maybe you just start a book club somewhere. You know what I mean? It's just like,
yes, I love that so much, Kate, because I am thinking about, like, our listeners and thinking about how many of them feel a longing or a dream. And starting a bookshop is not going to be feasible for everyone.
Yeah. Yes.
Otherwise, there would be so many more, right?
Yes.
Like that. But the book club, right? Like, and I think what's striking me as listening to you describe that, I love every tiny example that you gave, tiny/enormous example that you gave, because it's standing out to me that you started this journey with, like, this little dream sparkle tug in your own chest, right? Like, this is something that you wanted to make for all of these deeply personal reasons. But to watch the way that you following that and leaning into that and creating from that has met a need for, like, all these other people, needs that feel really present and pressing right now in the world that we live in, is really cool to watch both of those things kind of unfurl simultaneously. And I guess it just feels like evidence that sometimes paying attention to that little thing within ourselves is actually about so much more than just, I don't know, like, some sort of personal whim, but, like, it's responding to a greater need in some way. And I think, like, listening to those examples you gave, it's just like the exact opposite of these isolated bubbles that so many of us are living in. You're offering, like, I don't know, that trendy term, like the third space, but like a third space for people.
It is very, yeah, it's very real. Like, the third space is very real. And we talk about it a lot in our house because we see it so much. And it's like, we didn't realize it before. And now that we are living it, it is like, oh, this is very real. But we live in these isolated bubbles where we are not forced to have conversations with people who think differently than we do. And we see, like, all the algorithms are built to feed us things that we want to see and we already believe in. And, like, my neighbor doesn't think the same things I do. But do I not care about her because she thinks something different than I do? Like, that's not true. Like, we love all of our neighbors so much, and like, we care about them so much. And so it's like, you don't have to change everything overnight. You just have to like be present and willing to talk to people. And like, that is, I think that is one of my favorite things about the story. I've probably said that like a thousand podcast, but we have such a broad age range of customers and like such a diverse customer base. And I think it is so beautiful because it's like, my first customer when I was doing the business plan, the demographic that I thought would be our target demographic, I always tell people is me, like a 30-year-old woman. Like, that is, if you look at the stats, like, that's the primary reader. And our first customer was, she's like 70 something, Miss Sue. And she walked over from her apartment complex. And I was like, this is not the first customer that I expected. But it's like, I also underestimated, and this, it's like funny, I've told this to people before. I was like, I underestimated the male population of readers. And it's like, you just get in your little bubble of what you think everybody thinks or like what people are, because that's what we're fed all the time. But it's like, unless you go out of your way almost to find something different, you're not going to find it. And so having these third spaces is so important, because the likelihood that somebody in your neighborhood thinks something different than you is very high. And like, we're never going to find a middle ground again if we don't talk to each other.
Or like, get a book recommendation that we wouldn't have, you know, like
read the smutty fantasy book.
yeah, exactly. Or making assumptions about who will be able to relate to, or who will be able to connect to. You had this picture in your mind of like someone just like me.
Yeah, exactly.
And to see that all these other people are able to make connections in the thing that you expected would connect with someone just like you is really eye opening.
I want to go back to where you were talking about how you wanted to create this sense of small town community for your girls. What is it that you are hoping that they carry with them from this store and their time growing up there? Rebecca was like telling me a tiny bit about them before we jumped on a call. And I'm just like, wow, what a cool way to grow up. Yeah. So I would just love to hear anything about that.
I think if there are so many lessons I feel like I have learned watching them experience the store. This is not specific to watching them grow up, but when we talk about stresses and taking risks, like, one of my main stresses is like, how does this impact the girls? Because it does. It is a lot of time that we dedicate to it, and our family spends a ton of time there. And I was asking Justin one day, I was like, is this the right thing? Like, should I be doing this? I'm pretty sure I probably said something dramatic, like, is this destroying our family? But he was like, why don't you just ask Monroe? And that was, I was like, she's not going to say, like, she's going to say I should quit. And so I did. We were in the car driving somewhere, and I was like, Monroe, do you like the bookstore? Do you think I should keep doing it? And like, zero hesitation, she goes, you can do it whatever you want. And I was like, oh, that is like not what I was expecting. And that makes me feel really good, because it's like, maybe this doesn't have, like, I am assuming her feelings about this, and that's not really fair of me. And of course she's going to be like, can I come with you? Will you stay home tonight? Like, she's a kid. She doesn't fully understand. But the fact that she's like, do whatever you want, like, that feels safe. I don't know how else to explain it. But I think the thing that I want them to take away with from this experience, there's a couple of things. And I don't know if they will. But I do want them to know that, like, you can do anything if you work hard at it. Because we didn't, and we try to be really intentional about explaining that, because it's not like we just stumbled into this bookstore and we have this cool thing now. Like, we worked really, really hard to build this, and we are still working really hard to keep it going. It's not something that just happens. Like, some of the really cool things just happen, you know, but, like, we work really hard at this. And so I want them to, like, know that hard work piece, because I do think, like, when I talk about growing up in a small town and, like, the character things that I drew from that, like, that is one of them. Like, I grew up in a farming community. Everybody works hard. And then the other thing is that intergenerational, like, the importance of, like, being able to have conversations with people that are not you. And so it's not just intergenerational, but it's, like, it's everybody. Like, anybody who is around you, like, you should be able to have conversations with them. And we do see that quite a bit. Like, Monroe knows most of our regular customers by name, and she will talk to them, like, Miss Sue's in the store when she comes in, and she'll talk to Miss Sue, and Miss Sue brings Monroe's toys that her grandkids don't want anymore. And so it's like, I want them to feel safe having conversations, or feel comfortable having conversations that are with not people they're exact same age and kids. And we do see that now. Like, she'll go to the grocery store and she'll talk to whoever it is that's checking us out, like, telling her life story to anybody. And so,
yeah. Well, I'm thinking about, I don't know why this wasn't on my radar before listening to you describe that, but I'm thinking a lot about, like, what it is that you're modeling for them. Like, it's part of it is their experience in the bookshop and who they get to meet and how they get to interact. And Monroe's, like, so confident.
She's so confident. Yes.
It's amazing. But it's also what they're watching you do and watching, and that line that she said, like, you can do whatever you want. Part of what's striking to me about that, and who knows, you know, like, what all was involved with her spitting out those particular words. But to me, I'm like, part of that seems like I have a mom who can do whatever she wants. My mom can, there is no should. My mom can, if my mom has a dream, I can watch my mom work hard and make that dream happen. Like, there's just something really, like, she has this powerful picture of you. And I think there's no way that that doesn't translate into her having a powerful picture of herself and what is possible for her too. I don't want to overinterpret. I know that's your family, but it does. It's just like, from a distance observing that, that seems like you're modeling something very powerful for her.
I am hopeful that that is, like, what comes through, and that she feels that she can do, both of them, that they could do anything that they want. And I feel like in this job, compared to any other job that I've had, it is the easiest for them to see that, because they actually watch it. Whereas a lot of other jobs, kids don't get to see their parents working, or they don't understand what it is. We went to dinner once, and there was this, I don't know, she was probably a teenager. I have a horrible judge of age at this point. I'm like, how old are you? I have no clue. But she was some sort of teenager, and her friend was like, what does your dad do? And she's like, I don't know. And it's like, oh my gosh, like, I am really glad and lucky that I work in a job where it is, like, my 3-year-old could tell you what we do, you know? And so that, it, I think, is helpful for them learning, because they can, like, easily understand and, like, correlate that to, or, like, translate that into their own terms of what that'd be. But some days she'll be like, your job is so easy. All you have to do is go to stand at the register. And I was like, I'm always like, it's it's maybe not that easy. Like, give me a little bit of credit, Monroe.
How do I show you the other parts of this?
Yeah, right.
But, Otto, I want Otto to be able to see a picture of what I do. Because every time I travel for work, Otto always tells his teachers that I'm on vacation. And I'm like, Otto, it's not a vacation, okay? I'm working hard. I don't think he has too much of a picture of what I do yet, but that is pretty cool for them to be able to see, to have that whole embodied experience with you, witnessing alongside of you. That is really cool. We wanted to ask you our last question. We have been gathering this playlist together from our listeners, from Caitlin and me, and from the people we interview, of just a collection of songs that have held us, grounded us, brought us back to ourselves. And it could be a song that has popped up over the course of your lifetime, or maybe it's just a song for this season. But we're curious if you have a song like that.
I really struggle with music because I am always listening to audiobooks.
Can you give us a book recommendation or your favorite book on audio?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm also an audiobook listener.
Oh, favorite book on audio is a memoir from Maggie O'Farrell. And it was I Am, I Am, I Am. And it, like, if you read the description, it will say 17 brushes with death or something like that, but not all of them are hers, and a lot of them are about being a mom. And so it, like, the last sentence of the book just, like, wrecked me. It was so
oh, we'll be reading.
It's so good. But my favorite book so far this year is Wild Dark Shore, which is, it also has very strong mom themes. It like infiltrates you. Just, I can't push it out. Like, can I be anything else? Nope.
Who's that one by? Wild Dark Shore?
It's Charlotte McConaughey is who Wild Dark Shore is by. But it's so beautiful. It's this climate novel, so it is very relevant to the current state of the world. It's about this, like, seed. I don't know the exact term, like silo, basically, where they store all the seeds in case they need to repopulate the vegetation of the world. And there is a family that takes care of the island. And then this woman shows up on the island. So it, like, reads like almost like a mystery or a thriller, but there are so many good underlying themes to it. It's so beautiful.
See, this is why you got to come into the bookshop and chat with Kate and staff about books, because this is these are the gems that will come to the surface. I love it so much. Kate, this is incredible. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, I was just going to say, everyone's homework, wherever they live, is to go pop into their local bookstore. Like, find a local bookstore and go pop into it. And if you're in Kansas City, go to Kate's. But I think just listening to you talk about what your store means, I'm like, oh God, we all just, like, need to go and spend all of our money and our time in our local bookshops.
Yes.
Investing in spaces like that, where we are hearing stories we wouldn't have expected, that weren't going to come down the river to us otherwise, other than being in the room with other humans and readers and storytellers.
It's so important.
Agreed. All right. Thank you, Kate. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much. Such a delight.
You tell me when we're done, okay? This podcast is edited and perfected by the most beautiful wizard and my favorite dude, Micah Jones.
For all the show notes and a transcript of today's episode, check out our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast. This is our hub. It's where you can join the conversation and be part of our community.
If today's episode resonated with you or made you think of someone, share it.
And if you want to support the pod and also make us glow inside, go give a 5-star review on Apple. That would be so lovely.
Thank you for being here, for listening, for being a part of this community.
We love you so much.